I am an anomaly.
Anemone.
I am an anomaly.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen, and I don't have an awesome intro this week. Sorry. I'll do better next time. I know I said we'd be back this week with a new episode, but family matters prevented us from recording again. Unfortunately, Angela's baby girl, Lorelai, was very sick last week, and Angela has been worn out from taking care of her and full-time job, you know, 7-year-old boy, all that stuff. But don't worry, baby Lorelai is on the mend now, and we'll hopefully be able to record our talk on the first Wheel of Time novel, The Eye of the World, next time. This week, we thought it would be appropriate to re-release a classic Anomaly installment on the Wheel of Time prequel novel, New Spring. We originally released it in 2009, and it's been living in our episode archive at anomalypodcast.com with many other classic Anomaly episodes ever since. It's been a while since I heard it, and I don't remember if we went into a whole lot of detail, but just in case you just can't be spoiled, probably listen or read New Spring before this episode. If you're not concerned with that, we do introduce our audience to the world of the Wheel of Time created by Robert Jordan. If you're new to the series, this is a really good jumping off place. I highly recommend that you pick up the New Spring and Eye of the World audiobooks narrated by the husband and wife team of Michael Kramer and Kate Redding. They narrate all of the books and do a fabulous job of bringing the characters and the story to life. You can pick all of them up at Audible and iTunes, but don't forget to look for them first at your local library. If you have a comment on this or any other episode, you can record an MP3 or send your feedback via girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks@gmail.com. Or if you're the type who just likes to pick up the phone and call, you can call our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. You can also contact us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search in those places for Anomaly Podcast. Hey, if you like this episode, be sure to check out our series on the Lord of the Rings at anomalypodcast.com. Just use the keyword Lord of the Rings in the search box there. Enjoy, and thanks again for listening.
Viper 7901 Galactica, you are cleared for approach. Speed 175, Port Bay, hands on approach, checkers green, call the ball.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen, and... oh, fish guts! Burn me, I can't think of a new Anomaly intro. Yet another symptom of pregnancy. And I am an anomaly.
My name is Angela, and blood and ashes, my dinner was horrible. And I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast.
We used all the cursing.
All the cursing from the Wheel of Time.
That's it.
Blood and bloody ashes.
Blood and bloody ashes. I like the way the guy says it for Matt. Like,
oh, yeah. The, you know, the audiobook narrator.
The guy, yeah, who reads the audiobook.
Yeah.
Which, that doesn't give away anything, does it?
Just no, happens. No.
Matt is character, and he does say blood and bloody ashes. We're so excited, as all of you know, we have been listening/reading, you've been listening to the Wheel of Time series, me since about December, and mm-hmm. you since
October, maybe?
October?
Yeah, because I wanted to be an Aes Sedai at Renaissance Festival.
Right, that's right, because we were already talking about that. Yeah. And y'all were, yes, that's right, I remember that, because y'all had that conversation that I had no idea what you were talking about, and I was like, I don't know. maybe something about a warder, and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I started listening to him probably late November, early December, while I was working on some other stuff, and I am now on book 4, Shadow Rising, which is the 4th book in the series, but the 5th book that I've read because we started with New Spring, which is what we're talking about today.
Yes.
And Jen is...
I'm on book 10, Crossroads at Twilight. And the reason I'm
still... Are there vampires in it?
No. But according to some fans, there aren't any vampires in Twilight anyway, so...
Well, that's true. Spoiler alert for New Spring only. We're going to try our hardest...
Not to talk about any other books.
The whole idea is to talk about New Spring only, and then we will talk a little bit about the general, the world of it, but nothing will be plot revealing past New Spring.
Right. So prepare yourself.
You know, maybe they don't talk about exactly what a brown Aja is until, like, the second book, but we may talk about what a brown Aja is. But we're not going to say anything about what they do.
Right.
Okay.
So let's get to it.
All right.
Let me give you a brief kind of introduction to the author. His pen name was Robert Jordan, but his actual name was...
James Oliver Rigney Jr.
That's right. What Angela said. I'm just going to refer to him from now on as Robert Jordan. He was a veteran of Vietnam, so he has a background as far as, you know, understanding war.
In combat,
and I guess maybe even the stresses of that, and you can kind of see that coming through in a lot of his books later on in the series. So he did die before he finished the series, and Brandon Sanderson will be taking over the last books, which were broken into 3 novels, I think.
And the most recent one, The Gathering Storm, has been published.
Released,
and I know that a lot of you, some of you who are listening have read it.
We haven't gotten there yet.
No
questions about that, please.
Yes.
You want to just briefly give them a background about the Wheel of Time?
Yes.
And maybe just the world itself so that they'll know what we're talking about if they haven't read it yet.
Yes. If you want to skip this book and just listen to this podcast, it's probably the best one to do that with.
Really?
As far as... I mean, you should definitely read the book. But I don't think that it would take away if you wanted to start at Eye of the World.
Definitely.
It would not take away... to listen to this podcast just to find out about New Spring. I mean, but you can. I mean, if you just want to listen to the podcasts and not reading the books, that's fine with us, but because we're kind of doing cliff notes on it. But of course, it takes away from the experience of actually reading the book. But we hope to keep to it so that those of you like us who have just started reading can enjoy commentary of people who just started reading instead of us having the automatic assumption that everybody's read everything we've read.
We want you to get interested in the Wheel of Time, and so we decided to get a little more detail-oriented. So, the Wheel of Time, it draws on the elements of both European and Asian mythology, most notably the cyclical nature of time found in Hinduism and Buddhism, and the respect for nature found in Taoism. You know, most of this information in our notes right now came from the Wheel of Time wiki, which I painstakingly went through to take out any spoilers that would ruin the future books.
Yes.
So if you want any of this information in more detail, I have all of my notes that we're looking over right now, which we won't be reading all of, on the forum in our episode discussion for Anomaly of the Wheel of Time, New Spring. So if you go to the forum and look there, you'll see all this information that we don't read on the show. From there, I will go on. The Wheel of Time is a concept of religion in the Wheel of Time series. It regards time as cyclical, like I said before, and consists of repeating ages. So it's really based on something that exists in...
weaves as the wheel will.
Yeah, it comes up a lot. They always talk about the wheel.
Well, it is very, like you said, there are a lot of religions and philosophies of thought that do think of the time and the wheel of the year and the wheel of the world, you know, and how it all goes together. Because the wheel and a circle is a balanced force with constant balance. And that's something that's in a lot of philosophy and spirituality. What I like about it too is, for me, is that it's very open. One of the cool things about high fantasy is that you can kind of think of it as anything that you
want to make it into.
Whatever you feel it is.
Yeah.
You don't have, it's not telling you this is about this certain god or goddess. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I like that. They don't really go into spirituality as much in Lord of the Rings, but they do in this book. regardless of what your spiritual nature is, you don't feel taken aback by it, or you don't think it's weird, or it's put forth in such a way that it is accessible. There you go.
Well, you know, they refer quite a bit to the Creator and to the mm-hmm. Dark One and to Shadow mm-hmm. Spawn and Dark Friends and the Forsaken. I'll just touch on what each of those things are,
okay.
And then we'll move on to more important things.
Sure, sorry.
No, I'm just talking about, I don't want to read everything on the notes,
because right,
it would take us all night. But the Creator is obviously kind of like God, the deity responsible for the creation of the universe, and they often refer to him as the Light.
The Light.
And then the Dark One is like the devil. The Dark One was imprisoned by the Creator in this story, and he continually seeks to break free from his prison. In each age, the dragon is reborn to fight the Dark One and keep him locked away from the world.
That's
the dragon figures into this story.
Well, he's the what's the word I'm looking for? He is in play analysis. This is like the inciting incident. The whole story kind of, even though there's a bunch of stories going on,
mm-hmm. the catalyst,
the main point of the story really mm-hmm. has to do with the dragon reborn, and from the moment you find out that it's a possibility, that's the inciting incident. That's where the whole story kind of comes around.
Right.
Dragon.
We'll explain more about him in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the Dark One has his agents. They include the Shadow Spawn, which include a number of different species: Trollocs, Murdral, Dark Hounds, Golems, Drakkar, Grey Men, and Jumra. The only one they really talk about is Trollocs in New
And really in the rest
Spring.
Of the books, Trollocs you hear about a lot too.
Mm-hmm. But the other things figure into the later episodes.
Right, right.
And then the Dark Friends you hear about in New Spring also,
mm-hmm.
they're people who have basically sold their soul to the devil.
Yep.
And they all have their different reasons. Some of them are tricked into it, but they all kind of work for the Dark One. And then the Forsaken, who they kind of refer to a little bit in New Spring, they are basically channelers. They used to be Aes Sedai. Who,
male
for some reason, were also corrupted for their desire for power and immortality. But
yep.
they have a lot more power and ability than the Dark Friends.
Yeah.
So then from there we go on to Tarmon Gaiden, which is pretty central to the whole reason the Dragon Reborn is being looked for. Tarmon Gaiden is kind of like Armageddon. It's
right.
the last battle, and it's coming. And the Dragon Reborn will fight the Dark One at Tarmon Gaiden. And the survival of the entire world depends on him being protected until he's an adult and being able to fight and win in this war.
Right.
So from there, we go on to the Dragon and explain a little bit about him. He's the champion of the Light, and he will fight against the Dark One. The thing about him is that he's reborn in every age. Like we mentioned, the wheel kind of is a wheel of history, and it repeats ages, and he's reborn in every age, and in every age he fights the Dark One and keeps him locked away.
Right.
He can channel, and he's very powerful, and even though he's reborn every time, he's pretty much a different person every time he's reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Although sometimes, if he gets a little insane, he can hear the voices of previous dragons.
Dragons in his head.
Yeah, in his head. To that respect, there's also a lot of false dragons. And you hear about them sometimes. In fact, they refer to them in New Spring. And false dragons are men who can channel, who are not the Dragon Reborn. They sometimes really think they are the dragon and try to lead others, but always the taint drives them insane, and they wind up doing evil. And sometimes they know they're not the dragon, but they're just manipulating the fact that...
People think they are.
People think they are because they have power. They
yeah.
have the ability to channel. Do you want to explain the magic system?
I will. He sets up pretty easily what magic is, and it's called the One Power, and it can be channeled by certain people. Not everyone can do this. Men and women can both channel. However, before the breaking of the world, men and women could both channel, but something happened and the male side got kind of messed up. Because of all the stuff that happened, the women are still kind of, people are still wary of them because the power is the power, and you know what they say about power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the male side has been corrupted, so that anytime, like Jen was saying about the false dragons, is that anytime a man does try to channel, it will eventually drive them insane.
Mm-hmm.
They'll either kill them or they'll try to take the ability to channel away from them, but mainly women are the ones who channel now. And do you talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay, so the male side is called Sidene. And that is just what I was talking about with the men, and they will go crazy. And the female side is called Sidar, And this is something that I thought was interesting. Some women are born with the ability to channel naturally, and then some develop the ability to channel or might have the talent for it, and it comes later. And so, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be better than the other, but that's just, and what I think is cool that they do is that, sorry, I'm going off script.
That's okay.
Is that they do have a thing where some women are better than others. They really are. Like, I think you get the impression, like, I've always thought of this when I was trying to tell Jim about this book. I was like, you know, they're kind of like the Jedi. You know, the Aes Sedai are kind of like the Jedi. And there are some people who are kind of wary of them, but some people who think they're awesome. And you just never know because they are so powerful.
Right.
You know, where could it go?
It is remarkably similar to the system that they have in place for the Jedi and their counselors and
their code of conduct,
and,
too.
Yeah, their code of conduct is the same. But also their training, they take young women. But they're more teenagers than children.
But the thing, everybody's badass. Everybody's good. And then Anakin just happens to be a little bit better than everybody else.
Right.
And he's the most awesome, evidently. Whereas in the Aes Sedai, which I find great, it's a little, to me, like, real-worldy feeling because there are some women who were barely good. It's almost more like a Harry Potter type thing because there's some who are just great, awesome channelers. They can do everything. And then we meet women later who are, like, the most powerful Aes Sedai. And then you have some that can barely move things with their mind, but they're okay. And I just think it's neat how they really do talk about not just the most awesome ones, but there's a place for
everyone.
And I just think that's interesting to show just because you can channel doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to save the world. And I think that's interesting. And were you and I talking about the idea that the Aes Sedai are basically a giant tower full of Galadriels and how scary that
yes,
is?
Yes, exactly. Because you get the sense in later books that people are freaked out about Aes Sedai. They don't trust them. They don't like them. They clear paths for them when they're coming.
Well, it's like bears, you know. And it'd be awesome to see a bear, but you don't really want to be near one, like in person.
It might eat you.
Because they might eat you.
Since we're talking about Aes Sedai, well, that'll just be the next thing we touch on since we're
Well, because what I was thinking, though, is this is something I really wanted to talk about in this particular podcast, was that, you know, Jim went ahead and started with Eye of the World because I was so far ahead of him.
This is the first book, Eye of the World is.
Which is the first book. And Eye of the World, I mean, again, this is not plot revealing, but since it's from kind of a different perspective, you get the impression that the Aes Sedai are kind of scary.
Yeah.
And most of the people don't trust them, especially like the further away you get from the tower, you know, the further out in the country you get, it's almost as if they don't really exist, or they do, like they're evil, not evil, but they're like trickster sorceresses.
Yes.
And what's funny about New Spring is that
the perspective is different.
The perspective is just all about, you know, Moraine and Swan going from accepted to being full Aes Sedai, which is basically the story in a nutshell, and how funny they are and how
personable.
Like, they're personable, and like how I love how Swan, she's like a potty mouth, and she's just like, so, and there's just things that you get from her where she talks about how she doesn't want to ever have responsibility, and she's just so awesome. And she talks about how Moraine is like such a prude,
but Swan is also very conservative, which is the difference. Is that Swan was raised in a poor family. Her family were fishermen.
Yes.
And so her perspective in life is different than Moraine's. Moraine is a noble in the House of Domondred, but she's also the heir to the Sun Throne. So they're apples and oranges, but their friendship is very unique. And I think that's the reason why we clicked with the story, because we identified with the characters.
We did.
And that's very important for any story.
Yes. And it's very, like, kind of female power type book, even, which is funny because if you think about it, that the most of the story is about the dragon, who's a dude, obviously. That doesn't give away anything, does it?
No.
The dragon's a dude, that you would think that it would be a story about men or a story revolving around men. And even as more characters are introduced in the rest of the series, most of the main characters are women, all different types of women. It's so
And the book was written by a man, and it was still done well. Because a lot of times, it's
true.
Not done very well. And you're like, well, come on, not all women
are like
She-Ra, you know?
Yes, that's true. Or Xena.
Xena.
But no, so like...
Seven and Nine.
That's what I think is... Oh, Seven of Nine. How funny. I just watched a Voyager the other day. Tangent. Anyway, so yeah, I really liked the idea that if you've read New Spring, you go into the rest of the books thinking, oh my gosh, it's so neat to be an Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
You get that there's kind of intrigue in it because obviously, because we can talk about New Spring and what happens in New Spring.
Yeah.
We don't have to like pretend that we don't know what happens at the end there because we do find out about Dark Friends. And we also learn somewhat about Black Aja, which is something they don't talk about very much. Explain the Black
It's forbidden. Aja. But we should probably talk about Aes Sedai first.
Okay.
And then we kind of did touch on it, but let's talk a little bit more about them. And then we'll talk about the Ajas, because the Black Aja is a secret Aja. But,
right.
But
it's kind of like the Sith.
Yes, exactly. Exactly like the Sith.
Thank you, Jedi.
Don't want to believe that there are any Sith remaining.
While they're off on another planet, getting more and more powerful. Some people
they got blinders on.
They do.
Okay, the Aja or the Aes Sedai. Okay, the Aes Sedai are women, but in the old days, Aes Sedai were men and women. Before the breaking of the world, the Aes Sedai are the servants of light. They can speak no word that is untrue because they swear an oath on an oath rod, which is a magical kind of like
thingy
that they have to swear on, and it makes them to where they cannot lie. It's not like a choice. They just physically cannot lie. But they can bend the truth.
Well, no. They never actually lie.
They give you just enough information without giving the entire truth.
Right.
So, yeah.
Which is weird that something that would make you not lie would actually make you less... Like, people are less trusting of them because they know they can't lie.
Right.
I know that's weird. Isn't that weird?
It is weird.
And, yeah. Go
but,
ahead.
So, they can make no weapon for one man to kill another. These are oaths that they swear whenever they swear on the oath ring rod. Never can they use the One Power as a weapon except against Shadow Spawn and Dark Friends, or to save their own life or their warders or the life of another sister. That's the only time they could use it. And they have a leader. She's called the Amarlin, or the Amarlin Seat. And if you want more information, you can find that on the forum. I'm not going to go into great detail there.
Wheel of Time Wiki.
Right. But there will be spoilers. Remember that.
There will be spoilers. Yes. And I have used the wiki.
Yeah.
But the secret is to just know what you're getting into. Because, like, I admit, I have gone there and I know things that happen after where I'm reading. But sometimes certain characters get introduced and I'm like, I know that character is bad. I know that character is bad. I have to go check it out.
Yeah.
But I know what I'm getting into. What you're getting
I
into.
Knew what I was getting into when I was looking for the information to put in these notes to put on the forum for everyone, trying to filter out the spoilers, and I ended up spoiling myself on one of the characters later in the series who I always thought was good. I found out she's not.
Oh, that's crummy.
I hate that.
Well, I found out something, this is hilarious, but I found out something literally about one of the characters that was in the next chapter.
Oh,
of what I was reading.
Don't you hate that?
But it was weird because it was like some kind of prophecy.
Yeah.
And then it was the first time that he got that particular prophecy. If you look up a character, John Smith. Oh, John Smith is so-and-so, heir to the house, blah, blah, whatever, whatever. You know, and he's this affiliation, he's from this town. And then it starts usually, okay, during Eye of the World, this is what he's doing. During this time, this is what he's doing. And it doesn't say exactly that, but it's in order. So you can kind of see from what you've already read, how far down you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like right there.
Yeah.
And I read just like one sentence too far. I'm like, what? What happens to... Oh, crap.
Nice. So be forewarned.
Be forewarned. Just know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
But some of us do. It's okay.
Yeah. So, okay, on to the Ajas. When you were talking about the Black Aja, but I'm going to kind of briefly touched on each of the Ajas.
Okay. Can we do it together?
We can.
You go first.
I thought it was funny that Susanna, who's emailed us a few times about, she's really into this series now.
Yeah.
She was talking about how the colors they all have to be are ugly. Some of them are ugly,
they're
but not
colors.
All of them.
They're all colors. I don't know.
Think of them as jewels.
Yeah, you gotta think of a
or
jewel
metals.
Tone.
Yeah, or metals. Because some of them can't be jewels. Brown.
She's probably thinking of like the covers of the books. Like the covers of the books kind of have like a weird 70s thing, even
artwork.
Though they were written in the 90s.
Yeah.
They kind of have a weird 70s color. The artwork's fine, but the color scheme is sort of like a
old
color scheme. Yeah.
Yeah.
Continue.
So the Blue Aja, which Moraine and Swan are members of. They involve themselves in cases of justice.
Okay.
And they're married to their quests.
Yes.
They do not have any, like, relationships with men at all.
And mostly,
except their
of
warders.
The Aes Sedai are not really don't really have men. They're not nuns necessarily.
No.
But it is a fair comparison.
They say that relationships with men complicate their lives
Jedi.
Too much. Yes, like, yes, exactly. When I said they have the relationships with their warders, I mean, that's the only man in their life. It's not necessarily a sexual relationship. It's platonic.
And not to say, because I've gotten the impression that maybe there are sexual relationships, not necessarily with each other. They do have them, but they don't really, it's not necessarily part
pursuit.
Of the story or part
yeah,
of the...
Yeah, it never comes up,
it
really.
It never really comes up, but you get the impression that they kind of let each other kind of do
right,
what
whatever.
They do. Mm-hmm. You got to do what
but
you got
to
do.
But they do talk behind each other's backs about it, just like some women
just
do.
Like all
catty
do.
Women.
All women, not some women, Jen. Sorry. Okay, and the Brown sisters are known for their search for knowledge and spend most of their time engrossed in study.
Yeah, we all know women like these. We can go through them all. And then the Green, sisters of the Battle Aja, prepare for Tarmon Gaiden. They are by far the most tolerant towards men, and many even marry.
And some of them have, like, more than one warder, right?
Oh, yeah, they got lots of warders.
Yeah.
They have an entourage.
Yeah.
Other Ajas talk about the Green Sisters like they're loose.
Yes, they do. Like those little hussies.
Little tramps.
Those little trampy green hussies. Yes, that's totally true. How funny. Which is weird to me because they are
They're
warriors.
Just normal.
They're just normal, but the fact that they're warriors is funny. Like, both of the, I mean, not that they can't go together, but it's just funny.
But I think it's the two extremes. You have to be a lover and a fighter.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess that
kind of thing.
The Sisters of the Grey are mediators seeking harmony and consciousness, and they're usually the most skilled negotiators.
And the Red Sisters, they're just, they don't get along with hardly anyone.
They do not get, except for themselves.
And maybe the white,
each other,
the white
and the
sisters
white.
Sometimes side with them.
And their whole point is to find men who can channel
and still them.
Or gentle them.
Or gentle them. Gentle them is what they do to men.
And,
and that's basically
and
their job.
Needless to say, they're probably not getting as much as the Greens.
No, they don't like men.
Is what makes them like that.
They do not
Maybe
like
that's
men.
That's their problem, is they're not getting laid enough.
Gosh.
What, I gotta spice this up, Jen. I'm spicing it up. It's true. We know sisters who could use a good... Yeah. Okay. Roll in the white
and so,
okay.
You want to read the next one?
What, the White Sisters are logical.
Yes.
Devote themselves to questions of philosophy and truth. See, the thing is...
They're like the Vulcans.
When somebody asks about which Aja we would be, there is a part of me. I'm not really a warrior, so I couldn't be a Green. Truth. Truth is a very big thing for me. So
for me, too.
I don't care about everything else. I just want the truth. I just want the basic facts.
Yeah.
Tell me what's going on, then I will form my own deal.
Okay, the Yellow Sisters, they are the healers. Angela really likes them. There's a character later on that she identifies with quite a bit who's a Yellow.
Yes.
And then we have the Black Sisters. They are the secret Aja dedicated to the Dark One and have forsaken their oaths, which we read at the beginning when we talked about the Aes Sedai, and they have turned against the Light. So basically, they're the Sith.
I mean, that's the easiest way to just say it. They're the Sith. Just like the Sith, sometimes you don't know. Who's who?
They don't even know sometimes who the other Black Sisters are. Because if they get caught, then they wouldn't be able to rat on each other. The novices, which you hear about in New Spring, are girls traditionally between the age of 16 and 18 years old sent to the White Tower for training. In the beginning, that's as old as they'll accept, but later on, they kind of bend the rules a little bit.
Yes, if you know anything, you know, just from watching TV about how a convent works, it's basically the same kind of thing. There's novice training in a convent.
Mm-hmm.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? Okay.
And then we have the Accepted. Did you want to talk about them?
Sure, I'll talk about the Accepted. The Accepted, that's at the beginning of New Spring. That's how we start with our heroes, Moraine and Swan, are Accepted. And basically, they've gone through their novice training, and they have been raised to Accepted, but they are not yet full sisters.
Right.
And women can spend anywhere from 2 to 3 years to 10 years as Accepted.
They really want you in white for 10 years, and they have to wear white.
Novices wear all white, and Accepted wear white with...
Then we have Wilders.
Yes.
We'll talk about Wilders. A Wilder is a term for women who have learned to channel Sidar on their own without formal education. And the Aes Sedai sometimes look down on them.
But if they find a Wilder...
They try to take them to the tower.
Yeah, they try to take them to the tower because...
they'll burn themselves out and kill themselves
or
hurt other people. But a lot of times there are quite a few wilders who, you know, train themselves successfully and are
just wise women in there.
Wise women, they take care of others and still look down on. It's like self-taught people versus educated people with bachelor's or master's degrees. Or, yeah, exactly. Oh, you brought up the M word. For shame.
I'm just kidding you.
And we don't have very much more to read before we get into the meat of the story.
Okay.
But I think there's only... Yep, this is the last bit. Men...
Man, they're not going to have to read New Spring after this.
Yeah, I know, right? Men who wield the One Power. They go insane.
Nuts.
Pretty much. Waka waka. The Dark One's taint on Sidene causes any male with the spark, which is what they call the ability inherent in men, they will inevitably go mad and succumb to a wasting sickness, which causes them to suffer and to rot alive. The taint came into being at the end of the Age of Legends, not the breaking of the world. I used the wrong term.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
When Luz Theron Telamon and the Hundred Companions resealed the Dark One in his prison, but not before the Dark One caused Sidene to become tainted. The act drove all those attempting to seal him immediately to go insane, and gradually all the other male channelers fell victim to the same madness. The ensuing chaos and destruction caused the breaking of the world.
There you go.
Or the time of madness. Men who can channel, in short, are a threat. And that is the reason why the Red Aja came into being. And the Red Aja gentles them. And they take their power. And usually that causes them to die because...
They're so sad.
They're so sad. The power, when they take it in, men and women, they don't want to let go of it.
Yes.
It just, it's
they
euphoric.
Talk a lot about that. About how it is sort of... And you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you've seen other stories of,
about magic.
And you know, I made the joke about Galadriel, but if you kind of think about her and like when she sees the ring and stuff and how powerful it could be, that's kind of how my vision of kind of what Sidene is.
Yeah.
Is that here's this powerful thing, you know, I'm this powerful being and all of this, it could kill me or I could let it go. And that's kind of how it is. And the women also talk about how it's something they don't want to let go. Like it just fills you with this beautiful, like euphoric light to use the power. And the men, you know, the men too. So it's
but it also makes them sick. It makes them feel
sick. But that's good though. Cause I like consequences.
Yeah.
Big into balance with my stories. But the thing with that I find the saddest, like you were just talking about with the men or even women, if something happened to them and they had to be gentled or stilled, that it doesn't just go away. Like they don't become normal people. They can sense the power. They just can't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes them sick.
Yeah.
They're so depressed because they know it's there and it just drives them into a depression that makes them die.
Sometimes kill themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. But women can be stilled.
Yes.
Like men can be gentled. And usually it's a punishment.
Yes.
And it has happened to several Aes Sedai. So anyway, that is our glossary of terms and background on the Wheel of
Time
world.
Yes.
So, and now we will get into the meat of the story.
Okay.
Do you want me to start or do you want to start?
You go ahead and start. You made notes.
I made lots of notes because I re-listened to it. I've listened to it twice now, the New Spring prequel.
You are so good.
First time I listened to it, I was hooked, mainly because I loved the characters of Moraine and Swan.
Mm-hmm.
They were strong women, and I identified with them. And that's what led me on to the next book and the next book and the next book. And when I went back and listened to the prequel, it made so much more sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because basically it's like they have a whole bunch of cameos in this book and you get to see them as they were younger or where they were at that point in history.
Right.
And I understand them a little more and I know how much they've changed, which is another important factor in storytelling. If you picked up the book and never saw any change in the characters, they would not mean anything to you. Something happened to them that caused them to be like this.
Right.
And to me, I think the responsibility that weighs on them for finding the Dragon Reborn and dealing with all of the evil in the world made them old soldiers, reserved and mature. So the prequel made more sense to me in that way. And it wasn't just Moraine and Swan that I saw that in. It's in Lan, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of understand his background a little more and why he is the way he is in the later novels. Lan's story wasn't that interesting to me in New Spring, but I'm not sure if it was a weakness in the writing or if it was just because the more compelling story was Moraine and Swan.
I liked Land's story. Uh-huh. Not necessarily his story on face value, but how it interconnected with Moraine.
Mm-hmm.
Lan is Moraine's warder. He's a king, or he's
a Malkyrie.
He's a Malkyrie.
He is the heir to a kingdom that is dead. It was overrun by the Shadow.
We meet him in this story as a soldier. Just in basic facts, though, the mm-hmm. story gives you the backstory of Moraine and Swan, about how they became full sisters. Also, the prophecy of the Dragon Reborn happens mm-hmm. in this book, and Moraine and Swan are there to actually witness that.
Yes.
So that's important, because that kicks off the whole thing. Then also, how Lan became Moraine's warder, which we talked about, kind of that relationship, and it's a bonding relationship. Mm-hmm. It's very important. Then it makes more sense when you see them in the rest of the books and how they are together.
Yeah.
And they're not a couple. But what I liked about his story is, just as a book having nothing to do with the story itself, but just as the way that it's written from different perspectives, and the whole series is this way. So if you don't like this type of writing, sorry about that, but I love it. One chapter will be from Moraine's point of view, and the next chapter will be from Lan's point of view, and then the next one will be from Swan's point of view, and then all the different, and then mm-hmm. sometimes it's even lesser characters. It'll be just like a little snippet or a whole chapter, and you don't know how important they are until later.
The antagonist story.
I find that really interesting, and one of my favorite things is when Lan and Moraine first meet, they do not like each other very much. She is a full sister. She just got raised, and she's out there trying to be all like, I'm an Aes Sedai, and I'm awesome. Think I'm awesome because I'm an Aes Sedai. And he's like, oh my gosh, what is up with this? And she'll describe an incident that happens, and then he'll describe an incident like in the next chapter. She's trying to think, oh, this is why he's doing this, blah, 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 because he thinks this. And then he'll explain why he's doing it, which is completely wrong from what she thought.
She's sent from the tower to collect names of all the children born.
Right.
In the area, and they're just trying to collect names because there was a prophecy given, a foretelling by the Keeper, and so she had a foretelling. She predicted the birth of the Dragon Reborn. Moraine and Swan were there as accepted, and they witnessed it all, and the Ommerlin seat swore them to secrecy and told them to even lie about it if they had to.
Because
they were accepted. Yeah, they couldn't. If they were Aes Sedai. So anyhow, afterwards, they were raised to full sisters, and Moraine went on the quest because the Tower wanted to put her on the Sun Throne, because they had never really had a queen who was an Aes Sedai, and that makes them more powerful, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, that's why she's out and about when she meets Lan. She is on her own quest away from the tower. If they catch her, she's in trouble because she's not supposed to be out. She's just out trying to avoid being put on the throne. She has a book of names that she's kept on the side of all these children, and she's going and visiting all these people to kind of check up on them to see where that child is. And she runs into Lan because she needs his help to protect her, because there are people trying to assassinate her.
He's traveling with a couple of other
soldiers,
guys.
Yeah. They're very honorable warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And
kinda like Klingons, but not.
And if a woman asks for their protection, they have to give it to them.
Right.
And Bukama gives it to her when she asks for it, but Lan's a little hesitant because he doesn't believe her to be an Aes Sedai. He thinks she's a pretender. And he also has his own problems because they want to put him on the throne as the king of the Malkyrie, and he doesn't want to do that because it's a dead kingdom. The person that's trying to do it has her own reasons for doing it.
Right.
She wants power and stuff. And so he thinks that Moraine is an agent of that little conspiracy.
But what's hilarious, though, from back to the point I was making, is that both of them are having these whole ideas about what they think the other one is doing, and the other one is, like, completely wrong.
But Moraine's trying to school him because he doesn't have any respect for Aes Sedai. It's her mission in life to punish him for dunking her in a lake. She snuck up on him at a camp, trying to get him to escort her or whatever. She's afraid he might be a dark friend at the same time.
Right.
So she takes his sword when he's not looking. He knows she's there. So he throws her into the lake, and she comes out ticked off, And so most of the story, she's doing things to him, like putting ants in his bed with the one power.
And like, just else? Like messing with him.
Just sand him. On him. Just anything that she can to get back at him. And it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And he will not give her the...
Yeah, he won't scream out.
He won't scream out. Yeah. He won't say mercy. He won't... Because he has his own pride to deal
with. But then in the end of this book, which it's okay because we're spoiling this book. In the end of this book, they basically both realize... He realizes the mission that she's on.
Yeah.
He realizes that he's part of that. Yeah. And they fight a dark friend together, and they actually lose a couple of innocents.
A lot of innocents.
And one of his friends ends up being a dark friend.
Well, he's not a friend. The guy that ends up the dark friend, Lan never really liked.
Right, but one of the guys that he's with, it's one of the dudes, ends up being a dark friend. And this is also when we... realize there's a black Aja because it's a woman who was mean to Moraine and Swan, and
she was the mistress of novices. Yeah. They even described her as motherly.
Yes, but she was also very strict. The fight against her is, of course, really hard, and Lan and her fight together, and of course, they do win. Lan realizes that that's what they both want to do, and they have the same mission, and so they go ahead and do the water bond, and what's done is done.
That's pretty much the plot in a nutshell. And some people have criticized it for being kind of
It's short. It's very...
But it started out as a novella, and it was broadened into a novel. And so maybe that's why it's kind of like that. But the meat of the story, I think, lies with Saddam, Swan, and Moraine in their quest. Their transition from accepted to Aes Sedai. But... one of the things I was going to say that's pretty important before we conclude is that there are, like I said earlier, it's kind of like a cameo appearance book.
Yes.
Where you see a lot of characters from the series that end up here. And I wanted to say, pay particular attention to these Aes Sedai.
Okay.
Elida Aroihan, Varen Mathewin, Shiriam Bayanar, Swan Sanche. Remember those names because they have pivotal roles in the series. And then, of course, honorable mentions... Elias Manchira, he's a warder that Moraine sees sparring with another warder in the Green Sisters section of the White Tower. In fact, the Green Sister's name is Rhina Sedai. She says, "Well done, Elias," or something like that. And I thought, oh, Elias. Oh, yeah, he used to be a warder. Oh, my gosh, that's awesome. You know, just a little hint, a snippet, a little sneak peek of his life as a warder. And that point of history. Mm-hmm. And then you see him later on in the series as something completely different.
Right.
Tarangal, I think that's how you say his name. He's the half-brother of Moraine who married the Queen of Andor.
Ah.
And they mention him. The sons that he sired end up being pretty pivotal in the series.
So it's Moraine's half-brothers?
Moraine's half-brothers.
Okay.
Children. She is kind of their aunt.
Huh.
Their half-aunt. Which I did not realize until I reread the prequel.
I was looking at something and saw like a... I didn't think it was a spoiler necessarily, but I was looking at her thing and saw the tree, because that's one of the things on Wiki, because there is some confusing trees in Wheel of Time. So they have like the family tree type deal.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Definitely. But that's kind of like royalty, you know?
Well, they kind of mix. They have all kinds of brothers, sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could share a half-brother but not actually be related.
Yeah. They're their own grandpas.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
There's a Ray Stevens song about that.
Also interesting, too, the one thing that comes up in this book that they talk about that took me a while to figure out exactly what it was, but comes up in the first book a lot, and then all the way through, is the game of houses. I think we talked about this earlier, but not while we were on. Robert Jordan reminds me more of a European or UK type writer than an American writer. I was very surprised to find out that he was an American writer.
He's a Southerner, too.
And a Southerner. And so to me, because the game of houses is a very like complicated... It kind of reminds me, in a way, sometimes of even a Jane Austen. Jane Austen's a lot like cleaner and crisper than this, because this is like a dirty version of that. But you know how it's that kind of air of royalty and people saying this, that, and the other to trying to gain power. And I'm not talking about them like in reality. I'm talking about the fiction that I've read or seen that is... It's very interesting. The Game of Houses took me a while because they don't really go into it in New Spring as much. So it took me a while to figure it out.
They do a little bit. They talk about Desdemar.
And Desdemar.
Yeah.
And Moraine and how basically about putting her on the throne. The whole point of, is part of that. And the Aes Sedai they try not to play it, but they have to, yeah. kind of, because, like, then you don't get any power at all. So, anyway, very interesting.
Well, one of the things that I was kind of confused on, I don't know if you remember this, and maybe somebody listening knows more about it. Two times I've read it, I still don't know what the heck the Aiel left for. Now, I know they were kind of chanting...
At the beginning?
Yeah, they were kind of chanting on a line. It means one man alone. And if you started with the prequel, you have no idea what the heck they're talking about. But I'm going to tell you now, because it's not much of a spoiler. It's not going to give anything away. But later on, the Aiel refer to Lan as on a line, one man alone. So I think they turned away because they saw Lan was leading their opposition. And they were like, to heck with this, we're done. But that's what I'm thinking the battle ended for. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that was a weak point in the story. That if you started...
I thought it was interesting because of the way the chapters are. Because it happens and then it goes on to something else. And you're like,
yeah. What?
And then it's kind of funny because... And this is where you maybe see how it's expanded into from a novella to a novel. Because the book starts with Lan.
Yeah.
And it's Lan, Lan, Lan. And then suddenly it's...
Moraine.
All Moraine and Swan. Like Moraine, Moraine, Moraine. And it's just all them. And then really goes almost a couple chapters past what I would normally feel was appropriate, I guess. And then suddenly you're back with Lan right before he meets Moraine. So it's like, oh, okay, well, back at the ranch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sometimes you're like, okay, can we get back to Moraine now?
Well, see, I didn't mind that stuff that much.
Yeah.
But
my first time I read it, I was.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to hear more about Moraine and Swan. But that was just because I didn't know anything about the story.
Well, yeah, when I first started reading it, you were talking about, and I do enjoy Moraine and Swan, because that did, like, suck me in very much. But I think what got me really sucked in was just the idea of the wheel, and when I just remember this, like, particular page where suddenly it, like, all maybe the Amelrun was explaining it or something, just about how what the wheel is and how it all comes together. And it was after the prophecy, and then I started getting more into the whole series because okay, so this is like the philosophy behind it, and this is what's going on and how the timeline works and all that stuff. So anyway,
yeah, as you can tell, it is very rich.
Yes, it is. It's almost, yeah, it's tiramisu.
Yeah. It's immersive. Instantly, I started talking about, okay, we're going to be Aes Sedai for Renaissance Festival. I'm going to be green, and you're going to be blue, and blah, 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 you know.
Yes.
So it makes you want to learn more about it and read more about it.
It's neat, because all of us have kind of, you know, it becomes part of your vocabulary and part of your life, kind of. I don't know. That was just for me. But
yeah.
Anyway.
So, do you want to read email? Yes.
Printing out emails. Here comes the emails being printed out.
Who do you have?
I have Susanna.
Okay.
The one question that she asked last time we said we would address.
Okay.
And then two additional questions. Do you want me to read first?
Please.
Okay. This is from Susanna. You met her in our previous podcast. And she says... Hey, Jen and Angela, just wanted to thank you for suggesting the Wheel of Time series. I started with New Spring like you suggested, and although it's still my favorite, there's more humor and few peripheral characters to keep track of, I've embarked on listening to the entire series. As a result, I haven't turned on the radio in months. I should just have my iPod surgically implanted. I'm on book 3 now. Looking forward to your podcast, and I will take up your invitation to write for your blog, but the muse hasn't whispered yet. She's going to be one of our staff writers.
Yay.
Which Ajahs do you think you belong to? Susanna.
We wrote her back, but I'll say what I said there. I feel weird saying blue, because it's like saying you're in Gryffindor, and I'm not in Gryffindor, I'm a Ravenclaw. So, I don't know. I guess blue, I mean, because I'm not a fighter, really. I would say either blue or white. I do like the yellow, but that is for different reasons than just plain which one do I think that I fit in the most. So I think probably blue.
I wish I could invent a color, blue-green.
But I would say blue-white.
Blue-green. But I would have to go with green because I don't hate men.
No.
I have a warder.
Me neither.
I have a man. And... So I would have to say green because, and also, like I've mentioned before, I was into martial arts. Can't do that now as a pregnant woman.
No.
But I would have to say yes. I'm scrappy and I'm a warrior, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say green.
Okay.
But I am not a hoe. Like the other Ajahs think of the green.
Hilarious.
But yeah.
Okay.
So, and then the rest of her question, this is the question she asked in the previous podcast episode. I downloaded Robert Jordan's New Spring, and I read it in less than 2 days. And now I have another 28 days until Audible gives me another credit. It didn't have the humor I was looking for, but it was very interesting. How does it compare to earlier books in the series? Are they more along the lines of the Moraine and Lan story arcs?
After this book, Moraine is Gandalf.
Yes. Good point.
She's not Frodo.
She's the wizard.
She's not Aragorn. No, she is Gandalf. She's the wizard. She stays back.
Yep.
The people who are the main characters in the rest of the story are not in New Spring, which is why New Spring is good. It's because it's about the story of Gandalf, basically.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird to say, but that's for all of you. Now all of you understand.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Lan is Aragorn.
And he is. He is, basically. But he is like, if Aragorn stopped what he was doing and did everything to protect Gandalf, he's basically her protector. That's what he's part of. He is part of Moraine's kind of Gandalf-ish vibe.
Yeah, I don't think this is giving anything away, but the Dragon Reborn, you can consider, since we're talking about Gandalf and Aragorn, would be Frodo.
And basically, then, it's kind of like a
has
Frodo, yeah.
Little farm
like Frodo slash Aragorn, though.
Yeah, but then he has a whole troop of helpers that are
like
more important and much more interesting, I think, than anything else going on in the story. You don't want to hear about the antagonist or anything there. I don't want to hear about them.
I hate those chapters, especially when he starts like the last book, the book that I'm reading started with the antagonist, and I'm like, I really don't care.
Well, don't say it like that, because it's good to know the perspective. It's interesting, but you're so interested in the main characters.
You just want to.
You can't wait to get back to them,
And
that's good,
you
know. So, but the antagonist should be as powerful and as interesting as the main characters. So, you know,
that's true.
Is it a weak point that we don't care about them? We don't want to hear about them. We just want to get to the main character.
Well, I think that's fair because, I think that's very fair that they aren't really that interesting or dynamic to the point.
Except the Forsaken. Some of them are pretty wicked.
I was going to say, okay, you're right. The Forsaken, I haven't gotten to the part where they talk about all the Forsaken yet, but I'm told by several people that the Forsaken stuff is really interesting.
Yes, it is.
And because I had to cheat, I've read a couple of things about some of the Forsaken, and that's interesting. You're right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But some of the bad guys. But see, and this is something we probably don't have to get too far into because we're actually really long right now. What I like about the story, and we actually had differing views, is that it's from an old quote from some movie, I don't remember. But it was like something like, you know, most bad people don't consider themselves bad. And I think that the Forsaken, the Dark Friends, and then the Dark One himself, they have said, I am going to be evil. There's other people in the story who are antagonists who are not necessarily evil. They're just dangerous because their point of view, they think they're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're doing right. And this is a debate we were having about the Red Sisters. They think they are helping the world by doing what they're doing. And they're so centrally focused on that, they don't realize the damage they're causing. And if they do, they don't care. But that doesn't necessarily make them evil or bad.
Right.
Of course, I haven't been...
Misguided.
They're just completely misguided.
And very prideful.
And the funny thing is that this is something they missed when we get mad at George Lucas, is that that's something that we missed in Revenge of the Sith. It was just suddenly he was evil. There was none of this... There was not an organic transition. And I think that that's what's interesting about... The story told us he was supposed to be doing good. He was thinking he was doing good, but it really didn't read. Whereas most of the people in this book, if they have done something bad, you see how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the Forsaken, if you go back far enough, you see how they got there, which is interesting, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Because it's not just cut and dry. It's shades of gray.
I agree. Well, did we answer her question?
I am so sorry. I just needed to say that.
No, I think we did answer her question. But her newest question was, one more question for y'all. This is funny because she's from Vermont.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you surprised by the difference in the tone between New Spring and the books that followed? I was. I know they weren't written in order, but I'm surprised that Jordan chose to strike such a contrast. Moraine and Swan seemed to be spirited and driven with clear personalities of their own that stood out against the misty serenity of the Aes Sedai, who all seemed to run together in my mind. I know they were only accepteds for most of the book, which accounts for a lot of it, of course. But fast forward 20 years, and it seems like they've become just two more of the same. Swan maintained a lot of her own personality, but Moraine, as we know her, seemed to disappear entirely. I felt like she should have been anyone. Anyway, looking forward to the next podcast.
Well, I think it's exactly that. I mean, for those of you who watched Buffy, I mean, in this book, they're Buffy and Faith, before Faith goes evil. So it's like they're just two powerful chicks who are teenagers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're acting that way. And then they graduate to Gandalf. I mean, that's a big old stretch. 20 years is a long time.
Yeah.
20 years is a long time.
So really, you don't get to see this side of them
at all.
At all, because remember, he started the story with Eye of the World. So Moraine was always intended to be Gandalf.
Mm-hmm.
And he, after book 7, took a little break, went back and redeveloped this short novella mm-hmm. into a prequel novel mm-hmm. and gave them personality. And that may be what you see is like this huge difference between
right.
the way they were as youth and
right.
the way they are now. So yeah, and like
but
I was saying, they became
tone.
Old soldiers. They've mm-hmm. seen a lot. They've been through a lot. They've matured in the power. They've matured because of their experiences. So I don't think that makes them any less interesting to me.
No.
At all. They just have taken different roles in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But as the story goes on, Swan rocks. I'll just say that. I love Swan.
I like Swan.
Yeah.
I like Moraine, too. I mean, I like both of them.
Yeah,
and
I do,
Lan.
Too.
Love Lan. Hey, Jen. Wait a minute. So for the what episode, Wheel of Time, here's my question. I have read the first book and have been putting off continuing the series for years after hearing complaints about how the later books dragged on unnecessarily. I've heard that too. A friend of mine who is a Wheel of Time fan told me that James Oliver Rigney Jr., Robert Jordan, actually had the last chapter of the series written along with the first book. And when he was close to the end, his family had destroyed it. The Wikipedia entries about how he shared the details with his family, who, in turn, shared them with Sanderson, doesn't jive with this. My question is, do you agree the series drags on in later books, and do you believe the story that the true ending will never see the light of day? Also, do you think the series is worth continuing to read in spite of these pitfalls, and if so, should the prequel be read before the first book? Your cyber stalker fanboy, Stephen Curtis. Can't wait for the show. Wish they came more often. Us too. I don't know, because I can't speak to that because I haven't read it. However, most of the people that I know that have read it, that I read this because of them, you know, telling me about it, my brother-in-law and my other friend Jen and, you know, other people, they've all read up to Gathering Storm. So
yeah,
if they stuck through it, I feel like we need to too.
And I've read up to book 10, and I can tell you, I have found something enjoyable and interesting in all of the books. The pacing may change a little bit here and there, but everyone's different. So
right.
To some people, Lord of the Rings is mundane and droll. They can't finish it because it's just not very well written in their opinions. So did I answer the question? So like some people think Lord of the Rings is dross. Because if they can't keep up, they don't think the pacing is good or whatever.
I'm not a fan.
The language is hard to read, all of that.
But then some
and
people read it like
everyone's
every year.
Different. But yeah. I think that the writing in this book is strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think the character development is awesome. The world is awesome. The plots are great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes, you know, you can't write 13 books and mm-hmm. expect every single one of them to be gold.
Well, also,
you know, some of them are going to be better than others.
If
so
this says something about just the books that I've read, is that all of you know from experience that I'm not a reader at all, and this is like the most books I've ever read at one time ever.
Yes.
This is like, you know, nuts, except for Harry Potter, but that doesn't count because it's kind of a kid's book. But the other thing is that, yes, I have listened to them a lot on audiobook. I also got all of the books so that I could read them at night if I wanted to. And two of the books so far, you know, I'd get to like the last couple chapters while I was at work, you know, listening, and I would come home and finish them mm-hmm. in the regular book. And so a couple of them I've actually read, like at least a third of the book or something like that, as well as listening to it. So if I took the time to actually read because I was so interested,
yeah.
then I think that should say something.
Yeah. So in short, I think yes, it is very worth reading all of them. And just because one person thinks it drags on doesn't mean it's true. I mean, everyone's different. And believe me, my attention span is longer than Angela's, but it's still, if it sucks, I'm not going to waste my time on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what's good and what's not. Mm-hmm. And I would have to say that the prequel, comparing the prequel and these later books to Star Wars, it would be like comparing A New Hope to Empire, not the prequel movies yeah. to the original series movies.
Right.
They are not like that. They right. are much better. They are awesome books. It's a great series. And yes, you should read it all.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Definitely. Well, I don't think you get this. I mean, for me, like I'm, you know, four books in, so I might mm-hmm. as well continue.
Right.
So this is my other one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is a very long one. Hi, Anomalies. Thanks for covering Wheel of Time. This is a series I have been reading for way too long. At least that is how it seems when I stare at all the books trying to decide whether to go back and reread them. This gave me the excuse to start over that I was looking for. I was pleasantly surprised when I reread New Spring. I don't usually like prequels. They tend to feel forced since the eventual outcome of the story is known. New Spring was published in two versions. First as a novella in Legends, Volume 1, in 1998, then expanded as a novel in 2004. Before the reread, I remember the novella as being more enjoyable, but now I'm not so sure. The novella is the story of Moraine and Lan, their meeting, first adventure, and then Lan becoming Moraine's warder. I liked this because it showed younger versions of the characters, especially Moraine as a prankster as she torments Lan in order to get a reaction. Lan was interesting as it showed him trapped by his culture and the custom, even though this is years after the fall of Malkyr. Later on, he's a much harsher character and not easy to relate to. The novel expansion, to me, was not so well done, mainly because this is billed as the story of Moraine and Lan, yet Lan is absent almost the entirety of the first two-thirds of the novel. He shows up, see, then I was right of how I mm-hmm. that disconnect. Sorry. he shows up for chapter one, and then only in a couple of pages later on, the story reached the portion that was previously published. Both of his appearances in the novel seem to be throwaways to me. They didn't help the plot in any manner. Jordan was always reasonably good at bouncing between his main characters and giving them all equal page time. This time, however, the story comes out in two distinct parts, Moraine at the White Tower and then the Lan Moraine part. I did really enjoy the White Tower scene, since you never get to see a normal operating White Tower in any great detail in the main series. That's cool. With the interaction between Moraine and Swan, you can see how their characters develop and lead to Swan as who she is,
mm-hmm.
and Moraine searching for 18 years. This is where I think it would have been better to separate the two storylines, though rather than squeeze them together. I am looking forward to hearing this episode and continuing on with the series, just not too quickly between books, because I may not survive the book 4-7 stretch again if I have to read them consecutively. Thanks again, Drew. Drusel Zappa in the Anomaly Forums. Oh, Anomaly Boards, sorry. I hope I did you justice.
I think Lan was pivotal to the plot, don't you think?
Well, I think that just confirmed what I said earlier. That's just funny. I hadn't read that email before I said that. But there did feel like a disconnect.
Right.
Between the two stories, but I did get the feeling, if I didn't know better, I would have thought it was about, I think
Moraine
it's about
and
Moraine and Swan.
Yeah, not Moraine and Lan.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, it's necessary to bring him into the story in order to show how he and Moraine ended up, Warder and Aes Sedai.
Yes, and their relationship.
Yes.
It's so important to realize that I like that it shows that a Warder is not just an Aes Sedai's bitch.
Yeah. That's the second time we've said that word. But it's appropriate in this case.
What?
It is.
Does anybody listen to this show with their kids?
Yes, probably. But
just put
continue.
A spoiler. We'll be like, at 1 hour and 25 minutes, we say bitch. And then again at 1 hour and 26 minutes. But I'm right, though.
You are, yes.
I think
yeah.
if you were to just go in with... Because you don't really get
they're
to
like
see.
They're like their dogs,
yeah,
otherwise.
Yeah, if you saw... But what I think is interesting, when I think I got Jim to start reading, because I was like, you know what a warder is? A warder is a weapon. You know? And that, like, reminds me of Chuck Norris. Chuck yeah. Norris is a weapon.
These are certified lethal weapons.
Lethal weapons. But you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like the warder in and of itself, and having nothing to do with Aes Sedai, a warder is like awesome.
Yeah.
And the fact that they get paired with an Aes Sedai, I just don't think it should be... I don't want it to be compared to any kind of servitude.
Right.
It's a partnership and it's a...
A team.
A team, but it's... And yes... The Aes Sedai is the leader of that team, basically, but that should not denigrate at all the role of the warder.
Yeah.
At all.
So he was important to the story because he helped Moraine in the end.
Yes. Oh, yes.
To get rid of the Black Aja.
And then he continues to help her.
Yeah. Or the member of the Black Aja, not the entire Black Aja. And
but
also,
yes,
he does kill the Dark Friend.
Yeah, and he kills the Dark Friend. So, all very interesting.
Definitely.
So, no, that was a good email.
Yeah, and Casey sent us an audio clip. She talks about her thoughts on New Spring.
Hey, Jen and Angela, this is Casey sending you a comment for your podcast all about Robert Jordan's New Spring. Before we go into that, I want to briefly mention your Twitter escapades on April Fool's Day. Yes, I was kind of frightened for a nanosecond, but then I actually took the time to go back and read your comments and realized that it was April Fool's Day that day. And it's all good. I know you two are just making funny. You were very mean, but, you know, c'est la vie. Anyway, on to New Spring. I think it was a very interesting book. I was able to listen to it rather than read it because I've been so busy during the semester, so I just picked up the audiobook. It's an interesting book. It's a pretty good book. I'm not sure if it necessarily convinced me by itself that I should read the rest of the Wheel of Time series. I've been told that, you know, I should definitely read Eye of the World from, you know, Robert Jordan lovers and Robert Jordan haters alike, that it is his best work. I guess it's... I felt like I could kind of tell that, you know... It was kind of very slow, in my personal opinion. Not a lot happened except, you know, with the exception of, you know, Moraine and Lan, you know, coming together. I feel like it would have been kind of better if I had just read the novella rather than the actual novel. I think, you know, the pacing would have been a little bit better, in my personal opinion. I know other people, you know, probably like the book, and I totally understand that. I think it was pretty good. It's just that I think I had a little bit of trouble with pacing in the plot. But what I definitely liked in the book was was the amount of females that were well-written that pretty much dominated this book. Usually when you read a book and it contains this many female characters, it's usually chick lit and or it... all the female characters are one-dimensional. So it was very, very nice to, you know, listen to a book where all the female characters have very distinct personalities, and even if you don't like some of them, you know, they're characterized very, very well, and I think that was very, very cool. So I'm going to read Eye of the World. I'm not sure if New Spring necessarily did it for me by itself, but, you know, I would love to know what happened with the Dragon Reborn, and, you know, again, I've been told that I would really like it. I was actually wondering what convinced you to not only read the this book first, but what convinced you to get into the series by itself? I know you were probably talked into it by other people, but I was wondering if it was, you know, the characters that made you read the rest of the books. Was it the writing style? Was it the high fantasy world that Robert Jordan had created? Or did you just kind of take it as, okay, if I've been told I would like this book, I think I would like the rest of these books. I will just follow their advice. And also, I was just wondering, if you had to pretend that Robert Jordan only wrote Newspring was his one and only book, who would your favorite character in that book be? Personally, mine is Swan, but, you know, Maureen's very cool, too. But, yeah, I was just curious about your opinions on that, and I think that is about all I have time for today. I can't wait to hear your podcast all about Newspring, and also whatever podcast you decide to do afterwards. Hopefully a Buffy one, or even better, a Doctor Who one, where I can finally convince you to watch Doctor Who. I have 3 people on the forums who think you should. I have 3. 3's such a good number, apart from my one and only self. So, anyway, I hope you ladies have a fun time recording this podcast, and I hope we get to hear very, very more from you soon. Okay, thank you, ladies. Goodbye!
And she says that she thought the pacing was not so good.
I understand.
But that the character development, she also loved the characters of Maureen and Swan, and said the same things we did about powerful women and authors that not being able to write women very well, that, you know, right, male authors. And that in this case, Robert Jordan just hit the ball out of the park. He was great, you know, and we mm-hmm. completely identify with the characters. And I'm sorry, Casey, I have heard your question. Angela hasn't heard it yet, but she will hear it after this. We just don't have time to listen.
We've been doing this for like an hour and a half.
So, thank you so much for sending it and for recording it. That's awesome.
Thank you, Casey.
And for singing Manamana Anomaly.
We already said thank you for that.
But she wanted to know if Wheel of Time Newspring was the only book in the entire series that we had ever read or listened to. Which characters would we say was our favorite?
I don't know if that was the only book.
Yeah. It's kind of a hard choice because I like both Moraine and Swan. I like them for different reasons, but I think I would have to go with Swan.
I would have to go with Moraine, but it's weird because when I first started reading it and we were talking about it, every day I would change my mind. I would be like, oh, this is, I identify with Moraine because blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, now I feel like more like Swan. And now I'm like, no, I'm definitely more like Moraine. And it's cool how they're kind of both, you know? So I don't know that. But I would say that Moraine more, but I'm not as prudish as Moraine.
She's not that prudish. If you think about her going to the dressmaker, compared to Swan, that scene reminded me of You and Me.
Yes,
because
the dressmaking scene
was where Swan was. She's very conservative when it comes to her dress. She wanted sturdy wool dress and high collar, you know, so that none of her bosom was exposed, and she didn't want it too tight around the hips, whatever. And the dressmaker completely ignored all those things and mm-hmm. made her this very hot looking outfit in the wool that she wanted. But Moraine made it a point to tell her how great she looked in her dresses, just to stick it to her. And that just reminded me.
Well, and also the way she was talking, it was because of the way that Swan was talking to the dressmaker that kind of put that. Put that in motion, and Moraine was like, "Don't say no."
That's like Swan. You, though. That's like you, because you're always threatening to put me in something busty or belly dancey, like, you know, for Renaissance.
One day it will happen.
We're gonna get you in a corset. No, you'd hate me. You did get me in a corset, but I had a shirt under, a blouse in the last.
I don't know if that really counts.
Baby steps.
Hey, I'm willing to wait. I'm willing to be your friend as long as it takes to get you in a corset.
I'm just too conservative. You can't take that out of me. But anyway,
You hang out with me, so it's in there somewhere.
You are like the taint.
What? Now see, since we're being cool, let's never say that word again. I can't. As you've noticed, I haven't said it. I've let Jen say it.
The taint?
And every... Yeah. There's certain words I have problems with. That's one.
Okay.
Jim knows my words, and that just happens to be one of them.
Okay, now I know your words. This is new. Interesting.
My other words, I'm not, I won't even say on the podcast. They're too horrible. In fact, Jim will have to tell you them, because I won't say them.
Oh, silly.
Anyway, like, there are words that don't bother me, that should, but then there are words that are so silly that bother me completely, and that's one of them. Hey.
Like pleasure? Didn't you talk about
that? Not a fan!
We talked about that in one of our last episodes.
Not.
It's the anomaly of the game.
A fan. Okay.
Okay, well, that was a segue. But thank you all for emailing us.
Oh gosh, it's getting late. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Bye.
Thank you so much for emailing us. We appreciate it as always. And keep them coming.
Okay.
We love hearing from you guys.
Yes.
Jen!
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 What does Jen have? What is that?
Shh. Lightsaber?
Lightsaber.
Daddy.
That's okay, buddy. Okay. Go find your blankie. I love my feet. I do. I had one boyfriend who, like, didn't like feet, which was weird. Like, he was just sicked
out. Afraid of them?
No, he just, like, some people just don't like things. Like knees.
Like taint?
Ah! Just don't say it, Jen.
I'm sorry.
I ask you nicely. I ask you nicely.
Awesome.
Anyway, you put this in the Easter egg. This is the end of the podcast. Good
After
night.
Like 3 hours.
Okay, gosh, that was long. This was a long podcast.
Yeah.
What are we doing next? We were going to continue one of our...
Series? Yes, we could do that.
Empire? Or Two Towers? Oh, that's right. You said you wanted to do Buffy. We were going to put a 4 episodes up on the forum so that people could choose.
The blog, actually, because they have the ability to put a poll up. So become a member of the Anomaly blog, which you can find on our website. But we'll put a poll up there. You can choose which
blog. Oh, I also put up a vlog.
You did. It was an awesome one.
Thank you.
And we had a lot of comments.
It did.
People need to go check it out. It's basically a mini Anomaly podcast episode about...
Women.
Yeah, in
dumping
sci-fi.
Good men.
Or television, yeah.
In television and sci-fi. I think that happens in sci-fi.
And why writers do it. It's
why
cliche now.
Why do writers do it this way? It's becoming cliche that the woman dumps the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible to me.
Yeah. It jumps the shark.
Yeah, there's a point at which it jumps the
shark. It used to be that they would jump the shark when the two got together. Now they jump the shark when the two dump each other.
Right.
And it's usually the woman that does it.
Yeah.
But your examples of this were...
Bones, Big Bang Theory, and The Mentalist. But yes, so we're going to do a Buffy episode, and then we're going to continue the rest
of
our
series. We have a lot of good ideas about what kind of episodes we want to have in the future. But after this one, most likely will be a mini skirt cast.
Right.
And then another major episode. We need to start recording them.
And then backlog it.
Like, yeah, because at some point I'm going to be
like now when we could definitely do 2 more episodes.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I can keep going talking.
We would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Let me
It'll
give
be
you a
like
drink.
When I used to drink wine during the podcast and made so much sense.
Well, now you're reading,
I got really giggly and laughy, and now I'm pregnant and tired, and it's basically the same situation. But
I'm just happy that my kid has heard me so much that he's not waking up every time I scream.
Yeah, he's really quiet tonight.
Yeah, he's a pretty good kid.
We did try to get him to say lightsaber.
He did say it, but I don't know if we caught it. But I'll tell my little story, though. Last night he couldn't sleep, and so we were watching TV, and it was actually Spaceballs, and he saw it wasn't a lightsaber, but it was it was basically, it looked like one, and he just goes, Mama, lightsaber, and I was like, I'm really tired, but yay.
Good little geekling.
Good little geekling. Anyway, okay.
So, we have come to the end.
We have, you guys know the stuff.
We have come to the end of the road.
Wow. I just
Boys to Men.
Don't even know.
I just dated myself.
I don't even know what to say. I love them.
Me too.
I did.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway.
It's unnatural. Okay, I'm done.
I'm sorry.
It's late.
Oh my gosh. Whew. Okay.
If you want to email us.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. Girlygeeks.
At gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z. At gmail.com. And you can also visit our website.
Anomalypodcast.com. That's
and
A-N-O-M-A-L-Y blah, blah, blah.
A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com, where you can find
everything.
Like, yeah, you can stream our shows directly online if you're too lazy to subscribe.
Yep.
You got something against that, you can listen online. You can find our blog there.
Yes.
You can find our forums, which is a little icon below the buttons.
Yes.
And you can contact us there also if you can't remember that Girly Geeks is spelled with a Z.
Yep.
That's it. This has been fun.
You've been a trooper. I'm very proud of you. All right. I'm Angela.
And I'm Jen.
And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge.
Gamma Quadrant Golf Clap.